Audible is the home of storytelling, from audiobooks across every genre to all your favorite podcasts and exclusive Audible originals. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. Audible is the destination for thrilling audiobooks with highly anticipated new releases and next listen recommendations to pique your curiosity and sense of mystery. Best-selling titles like First Lie Wins, or the upcoming Stephen King novel, You Like It Darker. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/built or text built to 500-500. That's audible.com/built or text built to 500-500. When your work presentations and docs look good, you look good. Design stunning work presentations, docs, whiteboards, and videos with Canva. Canva is an easy-to-use online design platform that helps people at work design compelling visual content. We're all looking for ways to make an impact at work. Canva helps you get your point across visually. It's easy to design impactful Canva presentations, docs, whiteboards, and videos. Start with a designer-made template and customize your content. Add images, graphics, charts, and more from the massive media library. Canva makes it easy to wow any audience. I know so many companies and organizations that use Canva to do client pitch decks, stakeholder presentations, and slides for team meetings every single day. Start designing today at canva.com. Designed for work. I don't know about you, but I sometimes have a hard time finding just the right gift for a special occasion. Recently, I got the most amazing gift to mark a milestone on our show. I was sent a bottle filled with personalized M&Ms. And not only did they say HIBT on them, the other side had my face on it. My face is on hundreds of M&Ms. It is absolutely amazing, and it's given me an idea of what to send my nephew when he graduates college this year. M&M's has tons of graduation-themed packaging and party favor options for your personalized candy. I love the refillable Class of 2024 candy dispenser, which arrives pre-filled with custom M&M's. Honestly, it's super easy and fun to create personalized M&M's online. And when people see mine, they are such a hit that they might just be my new go-to gift to celebrate weddings, birthdays, anything. Visit mms.com to create your own personalized gifts and party favors for graduations, weddings, birthdays, and more. That's mms.com. Use code BUILT to receive 15% off your next order.
There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing!
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Welcome to How I Built This Lab. I'm Guy Raz. So over the past several years, there has been a lot of progress and also a lot of hype around self-driving cars. There's several companies like Tesla and Waymo and Cruise all working to get more autonomous vehicles on the roads. And for most of these companies, the focus has been removing the driver from the car, which would allow passengers to relax without having to drive themselves. But what if you remove the passengers from self-driving cars as well? Well, that's the approach that our guest today is taking. His name is Dave Ferguson, and he's the co-founder of Nuro. It's a company that makes fully autonomous vehicles that are made to carry goods, not people. And Dave imagines a world where many of our everyday errands, like grocery shopping or food takeout or package deliveries, could be performed by these cars. Already, the company's zero-occupant self-driving vehicles have been on the roads in Silicon Valley and in Houston, making deliveries with big-name partners like Domino's and Kroger grocery stores. Dave grew up in New Zealand, where he developed an interest in robotics during his time as an undergraduate at the University of Otago.
This robot was this beautiful little red rubbish bin or trash can. It looked like a little mini Dalek from Doctor Who, but bright red. And our task was to try to get it to map indoor environments. And so this was the first time that I'd ever interacted with a robot. I was totally hooked.
It was like a Roomba? It would just like move around the room and map it?
Yeah, it was like a Roomba, but about a yard tall.
Got it.
Because back then, the sensors and the compute and everything was very large to be able to navigate. And really, I fell in love with the idea of being able to provide a level of intelligence to another agent, and in particular, a physical agent, such that it could then go and make its own decisions in the world. Right? Like we would push a button and then it would trottle along and it would basically decide whether it was going to go into one room or another, whether it was going to run straight into a wall or not, which unfortunately it did fairly often.
Yeah.
But that autonomy was incredibly compelling for me. And that started a pretty long love affair between me and fully autonomous robots. And so as I was finishing my undergrad, I was thinking about what to do next. And that same professor said, look, you should go to the Robotics Institute at Carnegie Mellon. You should go work with this particular professor and you should go apply what you've learned to bigger and even cooler robots there, which is what I did.
Wow. So you end up at Carnegie Mellon. I think you're there from 2002 to 2006, and you did your PhD there in robotics and computer science. And did you pursue that degree presumably with the intention of working for, I don't know, a robotics company or like a Google or something like that?
Well, back then, that wasn't really an option, quite honestly. I mean, when I was doing my PhD, I thought that I would be a professor. But I got that wrong many times. I originally thought I was going to be a lawyer when I first went to university, and that didn't work out. And so I thought that I was going to be a professor. But as I was at CMU and I got more and more exposure into working on pretty big projects, like sending robots into mines and working on big outdoor robots, and then towards the end, these large high-speed vehicles, I fell more and more in love with the idea of really applying robotics to problems out in the real world. Now, unfortunately, at the time, there weren't a whole lot of jobs for roboticists that were finishing with a PhD, right? And so the idea of going to work at a place like Google or even a Neuro today wasn't really a possibility. And so when I finished, I think what we did have, which was incredible, was an opportunity to work on these DARPA challenges. And as I was finishing up my PhD, as you mentioned, in 2006, the third DARPA challenge had just begun, which was this robot race in a mock urban environment. And so it was self-driving vehicles. You had to obey traffic rules and regulations, and you had to interact with other self-driving and human-driven vehicles on roads. And it was a race to see who could do all of that, abide by all the rules, and finish first. And so that was incredibly compelling for me. It was related to what I'd done for my PhD, and I sort of leapt at the opportunity to be a part of CMU's team for that competition.
Hmm. All right. So you're part of this competition. And what do you do after you graduate? You didn't obviously pursue academia. So what did you – where'd you go?
So for that competition, I actually joined Intel. So Intel had a research lab they had just set up at Carnegie Mellon's campus. And the idea was that they wanted to have researchers that were keeping their fingers on the pulse of what was going on at the top academic institutions. And so they hired a bunch of really strong folks at that research lab. And when I was talking to them, I said, look, I'm really excited about doing this urban challenge with the Carnegie Mellon team. I think it's going to be really, really exciting. And they said, hey, that sounds great. Why don't you come work for us at our Intel research lab, and we'll effectively loan you to that team, and you can go work on this competition for the next year and a half. And then you can bring back some of what you've learned and help work on some of the projects that we have going on in robotics.
So you were in Pittsburgh, and I guess you also worked on this robot butler called Herb. This was like what it was supposed to like get things for you and move around and...
Yeah. So this was the personal robotics project at Intel. And yeah, the idea was to try to at least advance the state of the art towards what would be required to have a home robotic butler. So we created HERB, which was short for the Home Exploring Robotic Butler. And it was a Segway platform with a couple robot arms on it. And the intent was for it to navigate around your home or workplace and tidy up. I think we spent about a year getting it to load and unload a dishwasher, which was a lot of fun. This was back in 2007, 2008, so a long time ago. And I think that a lot of the challenges that we faced with back then, or particularly around manipulation, are still pretty thorny challenges today.
All right. So you were with Intel for a bit of time, and then did you stay in Pittsburgh? What'd you do after that?
After the Urban Challenge, I was honestly a little bit burnt out. I just felt like I could do with a little bit of a break. And I had a really, really good friend that was out in New York. And he said, look, it's really interesting out here applying some of the techniques from machine learning that we've been working on as part of our PhD to the markets. I think you'd really like it. Why don't you come out and give it a go? And so I spent a few years out in New York, and I worked for a hedge fund, basically trading using machine learning, which, you know, it was really exciting. I think it's a fun playground, the world of finance and automated trading. I think for me in the end, I didn't find that it sort of elevated my spirit enough. You know, maybe that's a diplomatic way of putting it. I missed working on something that I was truly, truly passionate about and that I felt really mattered for the world.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, to be fair, a lot of the techniques that we apply in robotics are basically taking in huge amounts of noisy data, trying to make sense of it, and then trying to come up with intelligent or hopefully reasonably intelligent actions. And all of that is very much on point for finance and trading. But yes, at some point, I just felt making one number bigger than another number was perhaps not what I had seen as my life's work, starting out my career in academia and beyond. And so I was drawn back to robotics and ended up coming back out to work with some of my friends that I had known from CMU that were now at Google working on the self-driving car project. So this is in 2011.
Got it. And tell me about what you were tasked to do when you got to Google.
So when I got there, the team was about 12 people, and it was an incredible team. As I mentioned earlier, there were so few opportunities really to work on applied robotics out in the real world, and in particular to work at a company as strong as Google. And so when I got there, I actually worked on the prediction system. So this was trying to predict what other agents, other road users were going to do. And so this was some of the first machine learning that we incorporated into the self-driving car project at Google. Now, obviously, sort of all of our systems are incredibly heavily machine learning based, but back then it was relatively new. And so it was just an opportunity to work on brand new tech, as well as obviously this application that was super compelling to all of us with a small, incredibly strong team.
And I guess while you're on this team, which initially was a small team, you meet the guy who would eventually become your co-founder for Neuro, Jiajun Zhu. And he had already been working on the project for a few years by that point.
Yeah, Jay-Z joined right at the start. So in 2009, the project started, and Jay-Z was one of the very first engineers. He had been at Google. He was working on Google Maps, and he got pulled in to help seed that self-driving car team. And so when the two of us were there, and we worked together for about 5 years at Google before starting Neuro, he managed the perception team, and I managed our machine learning, behavior prediction, computer vision, and scene understanding team. So our teams were very closely intertwined. We had a lot of collaboration, and we worked very closely together. In fact, the two of us have been literally sitting next to each other for over 10 years now.
And this project is basically what eventually became Waymo, right? I mean, that's what we now call Waymo began as this self-driving project that you guys were on.
That's right.
All right. So I think you're there for about 4 or 5 years at Google, and the two of you, you and Jay-Z, decide to start your own autonomous vehicle company. Tell me how you guys I mean, obviously you're working around self-driving vehicles, but what did you want to do? What was going to be different about what you guys wanted to pursue rather than what you already were doing at Google at that point?
We saw an opportunity for robotics in general. You know, when we created Nuro, it wasn't and isn't a self-driving company nor a self-driving delivery company. It's really a general robotics company. And what we saw was, if you look back the last several decades, maybe the last 30 years, our relationship with the digital world has completely transformed. I mean, even the internet is basically within the past 30 years, right? And then smartphones and our digital connectivity and consuming content and all the rest. But if you look at how our relationship to and with the physical world has changed, it's largely very similar. And what we felt and what we still believe is that over the next 20 to 30 years, we're going to see a pretty significant transformation in how we interact in the physical world. And we think it's going to be because we're going to see the advent of really useful, really beneficial physical devices that are going to come and make our lives a lot better. And so we wanted to create a company that would help accelerate that transition. And so our mission for the company was to really use robotics to better everyday life. And so we decided it was the right time to start a company in that space. When we started Nuro, we didn't know exactly what application we were going to work on. And so the two of us spent a bunch of time around whiteboards, thinking about all of the possible applications of robotics that might be somewhat feasible. And in the end, we settled on transforming local commerce through self-driving delivery. And the reason for that was that it was a massive, massive societal benefit. Almost half of all personal vehicle trips that we take today are for shopping and running errands. So that's almost 100 billion trips every year just in the US.
Wow.
That frankly we can replace if we had a service that could bring things to you without you having to drive around and all of the associated impact in a negative sense from doing that.
Yeah.
And it was a huge market, right? Those 100 billion trips represents a massive scale and an opportunity to give people time back, to reduce emissions, to strengthen local communities, to reduce food deserts. You know, every angle that we looked at it from, it seemed like a really compelling, really worthy opportunity for us to go after.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, more from Dave Ferguson on how Nuro is building self-driving vehicles for delivering everything from pizza to packages. Stay with us. I'm Guy Raz, and you're listening to How I Built This Lab. Here on our show, we bring you tales of the long, sometimes really hard road to building a successful company. Of course, no two entrepreneurs' journeys are exactly the same, but themes do emerge. One, there's no way they can do it alone. Another is how incredibly important it is for companies to keep their teams connected, no matter where they are in the world. Our sponsor, Atlassian, knows this better than anyone. Their team has spent over 20 years creating software like Jira and Confluence to make collaboration of any size and across any distance possible, because Atlassian believes the best ideas are impossible alone. And look, there will always be challenges with distributed work. Our team here at How I Built This might not be huge. We do a lot with a small group of hardworking people, but we really understand the importance of staying organized and having visibility across the team, especially when we're all working remotely. Having the right collaboration products can make all the difference when you need to move quickly, work efficiently, and make informed decisions. With their evidence-based approach, Atlassian has redefined collaboration for teams scattered across the globe. And if you're looking for solutions for your team, Atlassian's suite of software is the foundation to help make the way you work that much more seamless. No matter where you are, your team can plan meticulously with Jira and create a knowledge base with Confluence, turning ideas into action and brainstorming into breakthroughs. A world where distributed teams sync effortlessly, where the touch of innovation streamlines every project, that's not a dream. It's a reality with Atlassian. Whether your team is spread across the country or even the globe, delivering greatness is impossible alone. Learn more at Atlassian.com. That's A-T-L-A-S-S-I-A-N.com. Atlassian. So we've talked a lot on How I Built This about AI. And today, AI is no longer a plaything. It's a business imperative. Your team spends half their time writing, and one confusing email can turn into 12 confused replies and a meeting to get back on the same page. Grammarly is a trusted AI writing partner that saves your company from miscommunication and all the wasted time and money that goes with it. I have really found Grammarly to be super helpful to save time with generative AI prompts. It's also super easy to stay organized because Grammarly works great with other programs that I already use. Grammarly works everywhere you work and integrates seamlessly across 500,000 apps and websites. No cutting, no pasting, no context switching. When every word your team writes is clear, concise, and on brand, everything gets better. Join 70,000 teams who trust Grammarly to work faster and hit their goals while keeping their data secure. Learn more at Grammarly.com. All right, so this summer, I'm going to see the Taylor Swift concert. And of course, I bought the tickets months in advance before I couldn't get them anymore. Because when you want the best, you have to act quickly, right? Or someone else will get it instead. It's just like if you're hiring for your business. You want to find the most talented people for your open roles before the competition scoops them up. ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles. Immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter. And find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/built. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/built. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Welcome back to How I Built This Lab. I'm Guy Raz. My guest is Dave Ferguson. He's the co-founder of the self-driving delivery vehicle company, Nuro. All right, so you basically decide to launch this company. This is not, a cookie brand. This is going to require massive, massive amounts of money. And indeed, you raised, about 2 years in, $92 million in a Series A round. Tell me a little bit about what the sort of the building blocks were to make this come to life. It was you and Jay-Z, and then presumably you had to build a facility to start to construct these vehicles. Tell me, unpack the architecture of how you kind of did this initially.
Yeah, well, the next one will definitely be a cookie company guy. It's been a lot the last 6.5 years. So when we started, we were actually in an Airbnb. It was very HBO Silicon Valley style. And we had sort of one room for each team. So we had our software team in one room, our hardware team in one, our product team in another. We had wires going through the house up to where the washing machine was so that we could get 240 volts to charge the electric vehicle. And so it was very high energy, I think very exciting time. But we had to show some things before we were able to get the traction that we did with investors. And so our goal was to try to get an initial prototype up and going. And to do that, we had a Nissan Leaf that we converted into a self-driving vehicle. And within sort of the first 6 months of the company, we had it driving around reasonably well the neighborhood. And then in parallel, we also worked on designs for what a custom goods only vehicle would look like. And that for us was a pretty big aha moment, because it turns out that if you can relax the constraints for an on-road vehicle to not have to put people in it, then in many ways, you can almost entirely rethink what vehicle design is. And in particular, you can make a lot of safety optimizations for the vehicle itself that largely significantly improve safety of other road users. So one of the mottos that we have internally is that we want to keep what's outside even safer than what's inside. And so everything from external airbags to external crumple zones are a push towards this. And so that first vehicle we worked on the design for, and in the first year of the company, we had our very first vehicle. We called it the R1. You know, it was an initial prototype, and it was a great showcase for what would be possible.
And just to describe this, it's the size of like a one of those Fiat cars, those 500s, with these sort of doors that open up on the sides, and inside you would find your groceries or whatever it, you know, might be delivered to you. These cars are autonomous. There's no steering wheel. They're self-driving. But presumably, they can be operated remotely for safety, right?
They can. We have remote operators. We call them guardians that monitor the vehicles. You know, we try to be very careful about ensuring that any vehicles that we're operating out in the wild, in the public, that we have really robust monitoring, and we can send commands to the vehicle. We can tell the vehicle, for instance, hey, pull over, or, you know, be cautious. We can also answer questions for the vehicle. In limited scenarios, we can drive the vehicle very slowly, when the autonomy system, for whatever reason, needs some help.
And I guess this is a vehicle that is unique in many ways. In one of the ways it's unique is that it has an exemption from certain government agencies. Understandably, most cars have to have steering wheels and pedals and side view mirrors to be street legal. And your vehicle is the first one that is exempt from any of these requirements.
Yeah, that was actually our second generation vehicle. So a couple years ago, we got that exemption for the vehicle that we are today actively operating out in California and Texas. But you're absolutely right. The federal motor vehicle safety standards right now, you know, it's a 50-odd year old piece of legislation that defines what a vehicle is and what requirements need to be there. And it makes an enormous amount of sense if you assume that there's always a person inside a vehicle driving it. When you no longer have that reality, a lot of the stuff doesn't make so much sense, like steering wheels and side mirrors and even windshield wipers. And so we've been working with Department of Transportation since basically the start of the company. And so they've been very supportive, and that was part of what led to us getting that exemption so that we could operate our second generation vehicle.
All right. So the idea from the beginning was to design vehicles that would carry goods and really to replace, as you say, most of the trips that we take to the grocery store or for small errands to go pick things up, which could be replaced by an autonomous self-driving vehicle.
That's right. That's right. It's almost half of all trips that we take, which is an enormous opportunity, right? If you think about it, and that works out to roughly 150 hours a year, Guy, that on average every American is spending on those trips. And so if you think of it, you know, that's roughly half an hour a day that you could get back if you had a service that could do that for you, not to mention the safety and the fact that a lot of those trips are driven in a Ford F-150 to go get milk from your local grocery store. So there's a huge, huge environmental impact and improvement on the emission side that we can do. There's also accessibility. You know, over 20 million people in the U.S. live in food deserts, which we think we can make a significant dent in if we're able to provide this service across all neighborhoods and cities. So there's a lot. It's a pretty massive opportunity if and when we can get this right and build out a service that can provide this delivery.
I know you did a partnership with Kroger. I think Kroger is the second or maybe the biggest grocery chain in the U.S. This was presumably a pilot, but how did the pilot work?
Yeah, so we worked with Kroger, and we've been working with Kroger for the last 5 years, pretty consistently doing delivery services with them. And first it was in Phoenix where we did this first pilot with the R1. And the idea was that Kroger customers could order delivery from their local Kroger. It was actually a Fry's, which is owned by Kroger, the Fry's grocery store out in Scottsdale. Mm-hmm. And if they lived within a certain region around that store, they would be eligible for it to be delivered by our R1 vehicle. And so we were doing active deliveries. And I think we did a few hundred deliveries with the R1 to the general public around that Fries. And it was, you know, it was a great opportunity for us to learn what it takes to actually operate a small but real delivery service, and to get feedback from both our partner Kroger on the loading experience and what that looks like, as well as from end consumers on what the interaction and the user interface on the delivery side looked like. So that was really exciting for us. That was back in the end of 2018, early 2019 that we did that. You know, I think ever since we've continued strengthening our relationship with Kroger, with whom we have a big sort of long-term committed partnership now, and also learning from it how we wanted to improve the overall product. And that led to some of the changes that we made in our second generation and now third generation vehicles.
All right. So now, as these vehicles start to come online, right, tell me, help me understand how they operate. I mean, we've had, as you know, we've had crews on the show, which operate autonomous passenger vehicles for human passengers. And people are familiar with like Tesla self-driving vehicles, which are mainly cameras that navigate the vehicles. How do your vehicles work? How are they able to navigate roads safely?
Yeah, so our vehicles are fully driverless. I mean, there's no question there, because there's no space to have anyone inside them. So they're doing everything entirely autonomously, entirely on their own. They use a bevy of sensors, you know, somewhat similar to Cruise and Waymo, where we have cameras, we have LIDARs, we have radars, we have thermal cameras as well to help detect people and other living beings at night in particular. And they take all of the sensor data, they make sense of the world from that data, and then they figure out what's the right move for them to make. Now, one of the differentiators for us, because we're only moving goods around, is that we get to lean a little bit more heavily onto the safety side of fully autonomous operation as opposed to the comfort side. And so one of the reasons why self-driving is so, so difficult a challenge is that you have very little room for error. So on the safety side, you have to make sure that your vehicle is not going to hit anything. But at the same time, you have the comfort of the passenger that is inside the vehicle for sort of passenger-based self-driving vehicles. And so you have to both be safe, which would generally bias your system towards trying to be conservative, like slow down if you think you've seen something. But when you're in that vehicle, if it suddenly slows down or acts a bit too conservative, you look out the window and you see nothing there and you say, hey, this, I'm losing some trust in this.
Yeah.
Now, when you remove passengers, you still have to nail safety, but like our groceries don't care if we're a little bit more of a defensive driver than you or I might want our driver to be. Mm-hmm. We're okay with taking our foot off the gas if we think we've seen something, until we get enough additional sensor measurements to get confidence that, okay, there's actually nothing there. Now we can put our foot on the gas again. And that means that we can, we believe, do a really, really fantastic job from a safety perspective and still be able to get a system that we're able to deploy out into the real world much faster, because we don't have to be worried as much about the comfort side.
Hmm. I know, I mean, you guys have done partnerships with, as you mentioned, Kroger and Domino's Pizza and Uber Eats, but right now it's very limited. They're in very limited markets and very small areas in those markets. It's not a criticism. It is what it is. What are the hurdles? I mean, why? Tell me what you have to do to make this available everywhere. Is the technology still not quite there yet? I mean, or do you feel confident that right now, if you got the approvals from various regulatory agencies, you could start to deploy these neuro vehicles all over the country and they would operate perfectly?
There's a few things that have to sort of go in lockstep. I would say it's still largely about the supply side. And so the supply side is effectively both having vehicles at scale, mass manufactured, tens or hundreds of thousands of them rolling off the line so that we can truly scale across the US. Yeah. And beyond.
And now you probably can only, because they're custom made, so probably can only make maybe 1,000 or 500 a year at most.
Well, so we're working with BYD, who is, they usually alternate between Tesla as the number one or number two electric vehicle manufacturer in the world. I think right now they're number one. And so we do have the capacity, or will have the capacity, to make hundreds of thousands of those a year. Yeah. So that's one side. And there's also the autonomy supply side. And so that's effectively getting our autonomy system to be able to operate in a large enough set of areas. And if you look at how Nuro is expanding, it's relatively similar to other leaders in the space, where we're sort of looking at areas where the weather is quite forgiving for self-driving vehicles. It's not that we can't solve the challenges of snow and really difficult weather conditions. It's just that we would like to scale a service and get to commercial viability before we have to solve that. And we're feeling really good about it. I mean, we have regular operation, fully driverless custom vehicles in both the Bay Area and in Houston, and we're constantly expanding the regions over which we're operating. And so we're making a lot of progress on both of these fronts, but really it's those two coming together over the next year or so for us to be able to provide a commercial service over a pretty significant region, and then going on to really turn on the spigot of the manufacturing and then scale it across the country.
We're going to take another quick break, but we'll be back in just a moment with more from Dave Ferguson, co-founder of Nuro. Stay with us. I'm Guy Raz, and you're listening to How I Built This Lab. Okay, some quick math here. The less your business spends on operations or multiple systems, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. So to reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are using NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs and cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems. You improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move, so do the math. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/built today. Learn more at netsuite.com/built. Again, that's netsuite.com/built. As a business-to-business marketer, your needs are unique. B2B buying cycles are long, and your customers face incredibly complex decisions. Isn't it time you had a marketing platform built specifically for you? LinkedIn Ads empowers marketers with solutions for you and your customers. LinkedIn Ads allow you to build the right relationships, drive results, and reach your customers in a respectful environment. You'll have direct access to and build relationships with 1 billion members, 180 million senior-level executives, and 10 million C-level executives. You'll be able to drive results with targeting and measurement tools built specifically for B2B. In technology, LinkedIn generated 2 to 5 times higher return on ad spend than other social media platforms. In fact, so many of the brands on How I Built This use LinkedIn to reach customers every single day. I've talked with hundreds of founders over the years, and I've learned that LinkedIn has been vital to the growth of their companies. Make B2B marketing everything it can be and get a $100 credit on your next campaign. Go to linkedin.com/builtthis to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/builtthis. Terms and conditions apply. Welcome back to How I Built This Lab. I'm talking with Dave Ferguson. He's the co-founder of Nuro. It's a self-driving, fully autonomous vehicle company that focuses on delivering goods. Tell me a little bit about, as I mentioned earlier, I mean, to build a company like this requires tons and tons of money. I think you've raised about a bit over $2 billion. And you've got your own track, right? Your own closed track to test your vehicles on. And do you also, are you building some of this machinery yourself? I mean, I know you mentioned BYD in China, but I mean, do you have a facility where you're actually building the vehicles or the prototypes?
Yeah, so as I mentioned, we're on our third generation, and on all three generations, we have really designed or co-designed the vehicle. And so if we take the third generation, the Nuro, as an example, we designed the entire electrical system, we designed a lot of the safety systems and all of the sensing systems. And in fact, as we assemble those vehicles, their final assembly will be done in the US, first at a Lancaster facility in California, where we'll put the chassis together, effectively the vehicle part.
And then, I think Lancaster is where BYD has a facility in the US.
That's correct. It will be at that facility. You're exactly right. And then we will take that chassis to Vegas, to one of our Nuro sites there, and we will do all of the final assembly of the sensing and the compute, basically the brains and the eyes and the ears of the vehicle. And so all of those sensor assemblies individually we do ourselves, and then the assembly of all of those components onto the vehicle we'll do ourselves as well. So there is a fair bit of in-house manufacturing that we'll be doing in addition to the chassis final assembly all in the US.
So the Nuro 3 that's now the sort of the latest iteration, will that be the one that is the main consumer-facing delivery vehicle? Or do you think by the time you really scale, you're going to be on Model 4 or 5 or whatever?
No, that'll be it, Guy. I hope that's the one that you'll be able to get your produce for preparing your meals. I know you're a big cook. We hope that that's the one that we'll be able to scale across the whole country. Now, that is very much a optimized vehicle for goods transportation. Now, you know, that is absolutely our focus. It's what our bread and butter is. It's what our sort of raison d'etre is for a company for the first application. You know, longer term, there may also be opportunities to expand into perhaps vehicles that also transport passengers. But for us, you know, we want to stay very, very focused. I think focus is one of the superpowers of a startup. It's one of the real advantages that we have. And the opportunity and the impact of what we're doing in a purely goods delivery is just so huge. I think we want to stay very, very targeted and really nail that application.
What happens, Dave, when, you know, inevitably one of these vehicles gets hit? Not to say that it's the vehicle's fault, because I think the technology is very good, and I've been in some of these vehicles, and I'm pretty confident in them. But, you know, a human driver might sideswipe it, or might topple over, or, you know, somebody might decide to just vandalize it. How do you respond to those kinds of scenarios?
I think there are a couple factors or challenges at play. So one is first ensuring that the system can detect that something has happened and bring itself to a safe state. And so effectively detecting that a collision has happened or some dangerous situation, and then making sure that it pulls over and it stops. The second is, what do you do after that, right? Like, how do you interact with law enforcement? How do you make sure that that anything that has happened, you're able to potentially recreate and understand what actually went down and whose fault was it? And are there things that we can improve on the software side? I think one of the benefits that we have is that our vehicles are designed to have a very easy user interface and interaction with people outside the vehicle. So we have a very large touchscreen, we have bidirectional video cameras, and so everything that we use to make a really delightful, seamless experience for someone getting a package from the vehicle can also be used by, for instance, law enforcement for communicating with our mothership and our monitors and getting any information that they want. And so we intend to make use of that. And we have, you know, we've published some of the law enforcement interaction plans for how to interact with our vehicle. But we do think that there's a pretty nice opportunity there to do a really good job of that, because we have to do a good job of that anyway, just for our core product.
So this is unrelated to the technology, but of course related to the economic environment that we are now presumably entering. Nuro, like many other technology companies in the Bay Area, has undergone some layoffs. How do you sort of envision, you know, the next 12 months affecting your business, if at all?
Well, we've, you know, we did go through layoffs, and you know that's really a pretty awful situation. You know, Jay-Z and I have often said that the building the Neuro team is what we're most proud of, and here we were having to cut roughly 20% of it, and that was all on us for growing too aggressively and being too optimistic about the market and funding conditions. And I think what we're seeing is that we are in a sustained, fairly challenging period for the market and correspondingly for funding for very hard tech companies, right? We are a company that is doing some pretty crazy things. We're very excited about it, and I think we're making a lot of progress. But there's hard technology at the heart of this, and that requires significant investment before it breaks through to profitability and then is a massive business. And so we are trying to be very, very thoughtful about how we manage our burn as a company, where we spend every dollar, and how we ensure that with the balance sheet that we still have, you know, we still have roughly $1 billion on the balance sheet, that we can get to a place where we have largely de-risked all of the key risks for us, both in terms of the technology and also scaling and the demand with our partners, and are in a really, really strong position. You know, we generally feel really, really good about where the company is. Mm. The layoff was something that was the most painful decision that we had to make. And honestly, from a personal perspective, it's really the worst, because with other hard situations that we've gone through as a company, generally, Jay-Z and I can be in the thick of it and we can try to shoulder as much as possible. You know, we're in the trenches with the team and we sort of make sure that we're taking as much fire as anyone else. But with layoffs, you don't get to do that. Yeah. The reality is that it's folks that are laid off that are the ones that are suffering the consequences of our mistake. And so, you know, it's on us to really learn from that and sit with it, and then to remember why we're doing this and to get on with it and to try to honor all of those people that have contributed to Neuro, those that are still with us and those that aren't, to really try to succeed in this mission, because at the end of the day, we genuinely believe it matters. That's why we're here, and really want to go and realize it and nail this for everyone that has ever contributed.
Yeah. So let's go sort of 10 years into the future now, right? And there are obviously competitors to Neuro. There are other companies who are working on this kind of technology. But in 10 years from now, if most people have access to these fully autonomous self-driving vehicles that can deliver things, what are we talking about? It pulls up to your house, you walk out and you get your groceries, your pizza, food deliveries. Is that what we're talking about mainly?
Yeah, I think that's the first step. I think as we're able to provide these on-demand services, such as your dinner, to you, and dramatically reduce the cost of them, such that they're affordable to everyone, and we can really eat away at those 93 billion odd trips that people are taking that, frankly, in our minds are pretty unnecessary. As we build a service that does that, I think there are a number of opportunities to add additional really valuable and we think really exciting products for customers. So one example is packages. So right now, I mean, most of us get umpteen packages delivered from Amazon, FedEx, and others. And there's a challenge associated with trying to do that with a self-driving vehicle, because most of the time we get packages delivered, we're not home and we don't want to be home, frankly. We want the package to come and get left on our doorstep. If you have a self-driving vehicle, it's harder for it to leave it on your doorstep. You know, we considered slingshots and drones and other things that could take it from the vehicle to your front door, but as of yet, that's fairly challenging. And so what we see as the long-term future is, if we can replace these trips that you're taking and the enormous number of those, and you end up having a service that's coming to your house pretty regularly, either it's bringing you dinner or it's bringing you toiletries or emergency goods or, you know, groceries or whatnot, when that vehicle shows up with your dinner, for instance, it can also bring whatever packages have come for you. Right. And so we do see an opportunity where you can start batching different services And effectively, as an end consumer, you're paying the cost of meeting the vehicle once, but you're getting all of the items that you might want delivered at the same time. And that's what I think genuinely is the future of package delivery. It's that the packages are going to effectively come along for the ride with another on-demand delivery that you are going to get anyway. And I think that's the best possible end consumer experience.
That's Dave Ferguson, co-founder of Nuro. Dave, thanks so much.
Thanks, guys. It's been a pleasure. Really appreciate it.
Hey, thanks so much for listening to How I Built This Lab. Please do follow us on your podcast app so you always have the latest episode downloaded. If you want to follow us on Twitter, our account is at How I Built This, and mine is at Guy Raz. And on Instagram, I'm at guy.raz. If you want to contact the team, our email address is hibt@id.wondery.com. This episode was produced by Chris Messini, with editing by John Isabella. Our audio engineer was Andy Huther. Our music was composed by Ramtin Arablouei. Our production team at How I Built This includes Alex Chung, Carla Estevez, Casey Herman, JC Howard, Liz Metzger, Sam Paulson, Carrie Thompson, and Elaine Coates. Neva Grant is our supervising editor. Beth Donovan is our executive producer. I'm Guy Raz, and you've been listening to How I Built This. If you like How I Built This, you can listen early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music. Before you go, tell us about yourself by filling out a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Once upon a beat. Remember those stories and fables that would capture your imagination and you couldn't wait to see how they would unfold? And now, when you read them as an adult, you think some of these old tales could use a fresh spin. We have a perfect podcast to bring you the stories you remember, remix, and reimagine for the kids in your life today. Join me, DJ Fu, and my trusty turntable, Baby Scratch, as we spin up new tales in the New Kids and Family Podcast, Once Upon a Beat. Yeah. Wondery and Tinkercast are bringing you a jam-packed, music-filled weekly party where hip-hop and fables meet. It's Once Upon a Beat. Follow Once Upon a Beat on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to Once Upon a Beat early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or Wondery Kids Plus in Apple Podcasts. Once Upon a Beat.